Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Now, this is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Carbach Brewery, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? And hey, how we doing on a Friday? On the Press Box, as Nick is taking a day off, and my good friend Patrick Creighton is joining us at the fantastic establishment that is Carbach Brewery, right here close to 290 and 610. You need to stop on by, because this is your last chance to see A.J. Arthur J. Hoffman for the rest of his life, and yours too, because now after today, he will somehow end up in prison in Vegas. But on his way to doing so, he will be knee-deep in a gambling establishment and never to be involved with Gal Media again. So if you want to kick him in the butt, you want to say goodbye, get a hug, get a selfie, and grab some great beer, you need to get here to Carbach today between 1 and 7 p.m. Patrick, always good to have you on, my good friend. What is going on?
What's going on, Joel? You know, it's one of those weird parts of the year where there's nothing to talk about at all.
Really?
Except training camp and the NBA draft. And the Major League Baseball trade deadline, which is coming up on us very, very shortly.
Yeah, and at least one of our three teams is knee-deep in a pennant race that has legitimate chances to compete for a World Series.
This has been an exciting deadline because of all the player movement and the fact that we're still looking at major names that could still move in Chris Bryant, in Javi Baez, in Craig Kimbrell,
yeah.
John Gray. There are a lot of guys. Raisel Iglesias' name is on the market right now. So there are a lot of guys who are big names, who are impact players, who can change the balance of power within a division or within a league. And all of these guys all could still potentially go in, let's say, the next hour and change.
We got three till right after 3 o'clock. They always give you a little fudge room, but right till 3 o'clock Central Time, that'll be the end of the deadline, and that'll be when it's all taken care of, said and done. So that's why we're concentrating a little bit first segment on what's still the present, which is the deadline in front of us, as opposed to the draft that was now behind us. That was a stellar, stellar evening for your Houston Rockets. We can talk about training camp if and when you want. Deshaun is still there, but is he really, and what is he doing? But the main thing is, as Pat was talking about, is the fact that the trade deadline is coming up upon 3 p.m. Central Time. And Patrick, I ask you this, with some of the names you threw out, with what we saw that the Astros did, with the fact that James Click did so much with really so little to make sure that they were able to make some effective moves without tapping into an already depleted farm system or spend money that evidently Jim Crane doesn't want to do, what is there left to do? What would you like to see them do? And then the final question is always, will they do anything more at all?
Well, look, they made two additions to the bullpen. Like I said, these were smart, savvy moves that did not impact their bottom line. They were able to move Joe Smith out. They didn't want him. They moved that $4 million contract out, and that allowed them to bring in Kendall Graveman, allows them to bring in Yimi Garcia, and not change their distance to the tax line. And look, for 2 years, maybe longer, Jim Crane has been very steady. He doesn't want to be a taxpayer. He'll go right up to the line, but doesn't want to be a taxpayer. And then a few weeks ago, James Click came out and said, hey, you know what? It's not going to be a hard and fast line. If we have what we think is the right move, we'll go over the line. If we're going to go over the line, then we might as well just go way over the line, because the penalties are essentially the same, whether you're $1 million or $10 million over. And I kind of thought that meant, if we can get Max Scherzer, we will just go straight to the wall and not worry about it.
Well, I mean, even a Craig Kimbrell.
I thought that they might be linked in that if they could get Scherzer, that then they would go for Kimbrell, because at that point you're over the tax line and the money doesn't matter. Ryan Pressly has been terrific yep. this year. He's been one of the best closers in the game. And I don't think they look at, hey, we don't need to bring in a $15 million closer. Our closer is really good as is. But they made the two moves with Graveman and Garcia, and now you've got a legitimate bridge to Pressly, which they have not had. They are not over the tax. They're still, you know, $600,000 or so to the tax line. But I thought if they couldn't get Scherzer, that there might not be another reason for them to blow over the line. And so far, they're kind of showing that. The starting pitchers, look, there weren't a lot of real impact starting pitchers. Scherzer was the biggest one. If you could get Scherzer, you change the balance of power in your entire league. Jose Berríos. If you could get Jose Berríos, you can – he would probably be the next guy down the list. Now, he's not Max Scherzer, but he's a very good pitcher. And he went today to the Toronto Blue Jays, which kind of takes the real impact starters out of the equation. Now maybe the next best starter that you're hearing their name bandied about is probably John Gray of the Colorado Rockies, who's pitched very well this year. This is probably his best statistical season. He's more of a 2-3 than a 1-2.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the Astros could still definitely use that type of guy. You and I were talking about this before the show. You've got a bunch of pitchers for the Astros who are young guys who are on the verge of hitting career highs for innings pitched, and there is that marker of how far you go past your career high before you get dead arm, before you start inviting injury. And between Zach Greinke, with the fact that he had some shoulder issue right before the All-Star break, Greinke's been pretty good this year. But when he's off,
he's really off.
It's four innings and he's out of there if he even makes it that far. So when he's off, it's all hands on deck. McCullers has been terrific.
But you always got to watch his innings.
And he's a guy who you have, because I think 120 or so is the highest he's been. Yep. And then Framber Valdez.
That's pre-surgery, too. So now you've got to even be more hypersensitive to it.
Framber Valdez has had a little bit of Steve Blass syndrome for the last month. He's had a walk in the ballpark. And what made Valdez kind of ascend to possible number one was the fact that he got his command issues under control. And he stopped walking guys. But now he's back to walking guys again. Will he, is it a phase? Will he get out of it? Is it like a little dead arm period because he started the year late? You know, what is it? Or Jose Urquidy is on the IL for the second time, and I don't think you can really count on Urquidy because it's twice on the IL with the same injury, which means there's something there. And how they're able to go about that, we don't know. Jake Odorizzi is a five-inning pitcher. Now, he'll give you five good innings, but after that, You're throwing dice on how far he can go.
I was going
to
say the big fall off with Jake is it's not gradual. When he just goes right off a cliff. It's not like he starts losing command a little bit. He's just barely missing his spots. His velocity may go down a little. No, it's like it's all or nothing. We saw it his last two starts where he is cruising and he is mowing people down. And then all of a sudden when he hits that wall, it is lights out, over with. It's going to be serving them up on a platter, and it's ugly. And that's what they have to be aware of.
So I would have liked to have seen them get a starting pitcher. And John Gray would be perfectly fine. You know, you slot him in there, essentially behind McCullers and Greinke, and this guy now goes into the middle of your rotation. He stabilizes it. You know he's going to take the ball every fifth day. You know you need 10 starters to get through a season. We're long past the era of five guys make 34 starts, done.
Right.
So to get that extra starter, which would then allow you to, hey, you know what, I can skip Luis Garcia here.
But everything depends on the price, too. I mean, you're not going to sit there and say, sure, it's ideal to get a starter, and it's not going to be an ace. You hope the price is lower. But you know that Colorado, they're going to make their living off of cheap young pitching. And the Astros have some of that. But you don't want to give up too much if it's not going to be the kind of impactful guy you've seen this team make moves for in the past, a la Verlander, Greinke, et cetera.
That's true. And here, this is the other side of it. The asking price to the Astros is not necessarily the asking price to someone else. You know, think about, we go back to when the Texans traded DeAndre Hopkins, and the GM of the Eagles say, yeah, well, you know, they got him for David Johnson in a second. that wasn't the option to us. We didn't get that deal. Of course I would have made that deal. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if the Astros are being held up for more than other teams. We look at what the Yankees have done. The Yankees have gone out and gotten two power bats, and they haven't given up a top eight prospect, and they haven't even spent one single dollar. They've gotten the other teams to cover the whole bid as Brian Cashman's putting on a clinic. But that doesn't mean the Astros had that same opportunity. You know, if you have to get into a bidding war, for example, the Blue Jays just gave up their number two and their number four prospect in their system to get Jose Barrios. Their 2-4 prospect are better than the Astros' 2-4 right. prospect. They couldn't match that kind of price. So what is available? And, you know, we see this in the media. There's an Astros bias. You don't see a whole lot of positive stories written about the Astros. You don't see any stories about the comeback season of Jose Altuve when everybody wanted to bury him after last year. And now here he is, you know, on pace for like 30-plus home runs and, you know, hit around 290 and be an impact player again. We don't see any of that.
Well, I mean, I was talking about it the other night. The comeback Mariners' disastrous loss on Monday night was as big of a story and as much coverage on MLB Network and otherwise as the Astros had gotten, no matter the fact that they've had the best record in Major League Baseball since June 1. It doesn't matter. The only time they get coverage is when they falter.
And you have to look. It's reasonable to ask, does this carry over to front offices? Do other teams' front offices not want to help the Astros? Do they want to milk the Astros for more just because, well, the Astros, you know, they got to wear the scarlet letter and we can all pretend all our teams are clean and we never did anything wrong and all that? Is there that blowback effect? I think it's possible. But at this point, unless you're talking about John Gray, there might not be another starter available.
And you don't see them any at all exploring a bat. I mean, we talked a little bit about Buxton, but we know he can't stay healthy. We know he wants big dollars. He couldn't reach an agreement with the Twins, although he said he still would like to work on a deal with the Twins. That doesn't tell you anything other than rental, 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 and that's not something you want to throw prospects at anyway. And is he that much better than Miles Straw if he can't stay healthy? Those are questions you have to ask yourself as well.
I thought the idea of getting a bat was an extreme luxury. This is the best offense in baseball.
Yep.
And they are entrenched basically at every position other than center field. And if you're trying to, hey, we got to watch that tax line, I don't think Buxton, because of his massive injury issues and the fact that he is streaky as all get out, you know, he'll hit 180 for a month and then hit 340 for the next month. At that point, is it really an upgrade? And if you pay for that upgrade and then he gets hurt again, you've blown prospects for nothing. Straw and McCormick have both graded out above average defensively this year. Straw's picked his average up. I think his average up to like 262 or so. And McCormick has given them more power than anybody possibly could have expected. They don't need a bat. And you're not going to change your left fielder or your right fielder. You're not going to change any of your infielders. Machete and Castro have been good for you behind the plate. Center field was the only place to make.
No doubt.
And if I'm going to make that move, if it's not going to be a guy that I have control over and is a monster upgrade.
I was going to say, that's the biggest thing to me, and I translate to everything that I heard you say about every pitcher that you mentioned once we started taking the big names off the list, is the fact that it's not worth it to me for an already depleted farm system to throw some of the good prospects you still have, even if it's just one of them. And I heard the asking price on a guy like Kimbrel was up to four of them, and depending on what day of the week it was with the Cubs, and maybe it translates to something you were saying about if they really want to screw the Astros over, they were upping the ante every day because more and more teams were trying to throw their name in the hat. That's not worth it to me. I agree with you 100% on the offense, and the only position that made sense was getting a center fielder. And if there's not a guy that really knocks your socks off, then I'm fine with the center fielders that they have. Just like from a starting pitching perspective, if I'm only going to get a 3 or a 4 as opposed to a 1 or a 2 that I can really put the ball in their hands and I know I'm getting a horse and I know he's a guy that can take me to the promised land, then I'll live and die with what they have. Because until the Dodgers got into it late last night, I still felt like this team, with everything that everybody else was having to endure with injuries and otherwise, was the team best set to not only win the American League, but have the best shot to win a title. Obviously, Vegas and everybody has changed their mind since the best team that money can buy went in and dabbled in yet again with a move, or two actually, with the Nationals. That's going to get them not only Scherzer, but it's going to get them another middle infielder that they sorely need. So the Dodgers are right there. The Astros are right there. They're the top two teams in Vegas as well. But if I'm the Astros, I've done just enough. If I'm James Click, I don't think I have to do anymore.
If it's not going to be John Gray, there probably isn't another starter right now that's whose name is being bandied about that's worth giving up prospects for. Now, look, if you can get the guy on the cheap, but why would you sell a starting pitcher at the deadline for cheap? It doesn't make sense otherwise. They're right there, top of the league. They've addressed the bullpen. This is probably what they're going to war with. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the best team in all of baseball, but it's good enough to have them in right there in the mix to go to a fifth straight ALCS. And then from that point on, somebody gets hot, somebody gets cold, you got your shot.
You're there. You got a ticket to the dance. Now let's see how good you cut rug. All right, we're just getting started right here on the press box. If you missed it, Nick's out today, so Patrick Creighton is in. My good friend and I are going to talk about all kinds of things, and as we mentioned, there's plenty to talk about. We just kind of broke down as we head till 3 o'clock, and we'll keep you updated on all the moves that might still be made with a trade deadline fast approaching in Major League Baseball. We had an NBA draft last night. As long as there was a draft to be had, there were picks to be made. And, oh, by the way, for the first time in a long time, the Rockets made them, and they made them in abundance. 4 first-round picks, not the 3 we thought they were entering the draft with, were taken by Rafael Stone and his crew. And honestly, I'll tell you right now, as I did on Twitter, I think they did quite well. I tip my cap to what Mr. Stone was able to do last night and what the Rockets were able to acquire. So we'll talk about that. A big trade in the NBA as well as some other ones. And lots of other things, including NFL and the Houston Texans. You want to join us? 713-780-3776. That's the number on the HRP listener line. Call if you will, but it's easier to text. If you text, put your name on it because we'd like to talk to you directly. And otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitch. You can hit us up on Twitter as we're available throughout the show. Special kudos to Tyler Scott, who's sitting right next to us and here and got us on the air today, so we appreciate him, and we appreciate you. We are at Carback Brewery, and you should be too. It is the last day for Arthur J. Hoffman as a member of the Gal Media team and the Blitz. Therefore, stop by and kick him in the ball. I mean, say hi and take a selfie and have some beer and have some. Dr. Dran, 290's already here. You should be here too. Much more coming up next right here on the Press Box.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Oh, 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 no, no.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Carbach Brewery. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, no Nick today. That means my man PC, Patrick Creighton, and I taking you all the way till 4 o'clock. And then the Blitz on their final ever Blitz. From 4 to 7, as we say goodbye to A.J. Hoffman. Got a nice setup here upstairs at Carbach. The promo team is here. Alex and Claire are making sure that you can interact with them. Dr. Dre on 290 already cozied up to the corner where he can do some things. Keep his hands busy while he enjoys watching the show. Because you know how much we are titillating radio. And you are always a part of it, too. We started out by talking about the most current of the big current events in the city of Houston as it regards to sports. That is the fact that the trade deadline still has until 3 o'clock Central. Astros already making a couple of great moves inexpensively by James Click, but they still could possibly do some other things. Jeff Passan now reporting the White Sox are finalizing a deal to acquire Craig Kimbrell from the Chicago Cubs. We knew it was happening yesterday. The two teams in Chicago were talking, but it didn't come up to anything that we thought was a big deal. That would constitute kind of a big deal. That's one where one of the teams right there neck and neck with you for the American League, Pat, has now decided to take your two closer moves from bad teams and say, I'll see you one better. I'll add Craig Kimbrell to the mix.
Well, you know, the White Sox, look, the White Sox have made the jump, and they've certainly ascended to the top of the Central. And, look, it's not even like a race anymore. I mean, this isn't about the White Sox versus the Tribe or anybody else. This is about the White Sox against the Astros, the Rays, the Red Sox, and now the Yankees. It's top teams fighting for postseason positional superiority. And the White Sox, who they are behind the Astros, they're the second best run differential in the league. Their pitching has been very good. Now they lock down the back of that bullpen. Look, that's a great move for the White Sox. I'm interested to see what the cost to it is.
I am too.
Because for the Cubs to help out the Southsiders, that'd be like the Yankees or the Mets helping out the Yankees or vice versa. So I'm interested to see how big the cost was because so many teams were in on Kimbrel. There had to be a bidding war. So the price should be pretty, pretty high. But I'm interested to see it. The White Sox are better right now as a result.
I agree. And I think that, you know, when you start comparing the two teams, especially, God forbid, they'd have to play in the first round of the playoffs instead of in the ALCS. But if you take it, you know, what I would consider right now, depending on what the Red Sox do between now and three, I would say it's between the White Sox and the Astros for the American League. It was what every scout in the building was saying when the White Sox and Astros played both there and here. And I'd say this, I agree with you 100%. I think offensively, Astros better than White Sox. I think that pitching-wise, I now think that especially with the two pitching performances we saw to finish off the series in Chicago, leads you to believe that their starters are better than the Astros. The bullpen, in which the middle of the bullpen was a disaster for Houston, and there's some live arms in the White Sox, but at the end, I gave advantage closer to Ryan Pressly. Now you start looking at it. Obviously, the bullpen in the middle is better for your Houston Astros, but obviously the closer now becomes even better for the Chicago White Sox. Where are you in terms of the lay of the land and a balance of power and where everybody matches up between Chicago and Houston?
Now, I would still give the Astros just not as big an edge as before. The White Sox front end of their rotation is better than the Astros. I think the Astros' overall bullpen depth now with the moves that they've made, slight edge, if worst case scenario, even. But the Astros definitely the better lineup. And while the White Sox are going to get a couple of guys back here coming back, the Astros are going to get Alex Bregman coming back. And we all know Alex Bregman's second half is, you know, he gets out of the Clark Kent suit and he puts on the Superman suit second half of the season.
Let's be honest, he hasn't been healthy all year. So the fact that he's had this much time off to not just, you know, rehab that injury, but just to get completely healthy, you're right. Between him and getting a healthy, and you hope he stays that way, Aledmys Diaz, you got two great bats coming back.
Yeah, and Diaz, look, Diaz hits. All the guy does is hit, and he hits for power. He can play a bunch of different positions. He's been serviceable in left field. Like, he's not making a fool of himself.
Right.
I certainly do not want to see him in right field, which they've only done once this year. But he can play left field if he has to. He can play third. He can play short. He can play second. He can play first.
He's this year's Marwin, but a better stick.
That's a better stick and more consistent stick. Maybe won't. I mean, look, Marwin wasn't a big, you know, on base as far as like taking pitches and drawing walks, but Aledmys has a little more power.
Yep.
And he can play just as many positions. He's a terrific guy to have. I love that when they made that decision that they weren't going to pay Marwin. It's like, all right, now you've got to find your new Swiss Army knife guy. And they got him, and Diaz was with the Blue Jays. And that was a great pickup. If he could just stay healthy, and I know getting hit on the hand by a fastball, I would not be, you know. I know he was talking with Bagwell about the big pad that Bagwell used to wear because he had broken his hand, 3 years in a row?
Yep.
So, you know, his pad's not as big, but now he's got a pad on. So Diaz is a good bat to bring back. Bregman is an elite bat to bring back. And outside of the worst thing that you're going to see from the Astros this week as they go to San Francisco and then they go to L.A. is you're probably not going to see much Jordan Alvarez. They're, you know,
National League, yep.
Dusty had said he's probably going to be relegated to pinch hitting duties. Now, if Brantley, they've had to do a lot of maintenance with Brantley lately. If Brantley needs a day off, you know, we could see Jordan in left. But I would expect if we're going to see Jordan in left, probably more of a chance of seeing Jordan in San Francisco than in L.A. You know, L.A. is going
to
be
bigger outfield. I was going to say that to you when you were talking about the Diaz's ability to play the outfield. I don't need to see Jordan out there except for against National League teams when you feel like you absolutely have to have that bat in the middle of your lineup. Because otherwise, From a nimble standpoint and a better arm and a basically, you know, a cagier, more intelligent outfielder, I would take Diaz out there before I would have to put Yordan out there. So you don't have to deal with that once you get done playing with the National League teams. But for this road trip, as you mentioned, it's going to be front and center that as much as you want that big bat in the middle of the lineup, I mean, I don't know that you're going to have that big bat in the middle of the lineup except for as a pinch hitter.
No, and they have to – they've got to manage Michael Brantley. They need him in October. And, you know, if he winds up with some kind of significant leg injury and he winds up missing time, that's an extremely suboptimal position for them to be in, considering he's already missed a lot of time. We've already seen the alignment of McCormick in left, Straw in center, and Tucker in right. And that's a very good defensive alignment with a lot of speed. That might be the most speed combined for any outfield alignment. But it's a big drop-off in offense from going from Brantley to McCormick.
Sure it is.
So, you know, you're – might have to see some Yordan out there. And to Yordan's credit, clearly he has worked hard at improving his defense.
He just never looks like he has a fourth and fifth gear. It looks like he's just even keeled no matter what. He's not going to really bust his ass to get to a ball in the corner or, you know, let one go on a hard throw and to any bases. He's just going to go through the motions and realize whatever I don't do in the outfield, I'm in there for more important things like swinging a big stick.
Yeah, I don't think he's a very fast runner. And we've seen him, you know, go second to home, first to third. And you know, he's so big, he takes big strides. It never looks like he's moving all that fast, even when he is. The issues you have with Yordan, of course, are he doesn't have great knees. So you're concerned about cutting, sharp stops, things like that. You know, if you've got to cut a base hard. And that's why I think when we see him, he doesn't cut bases all that hard. He doesn't look like he's running fast, but he covers a lot of ground.
Yeah.
Darryl Strawberry was like that. Strawberry never looked like he was running fast, but when you're 6'6 and your legs are tree trunks, every step you take is like 8 yards. So he covered a lot more ground than you thought he did. I think Yordan is faster than people think he is, but no, he doesn't look like he's moving. He doesn't have that high-end gear like a Straw, McCormick, or Tucker have where when they get into fifth gear, they're really moving. He doesn't have that, but he's not standing there in cement either.
Well, we're watching what's going on with the trade deadline between now and 3 o'clock. We know the Red Sox only really big move was getting Kyle Schwarber from a Nationals team that's not just having a fire sale. They're having a yard sale. They're having a free-if-you-want-to-get-it sale. Everything's going on with the Nationals right now as they're just getting rid of everybody they possibly can. On top of that, we know everything that the Yankees did. They got Anthony Rizzo. They got Joey Gallo. They got a bunch of swing-and-miss, hit-and-miss, power or strikeout type guys, but they did add two left-handed bats to a lineup that desperately needed them. So we'll see how that goes. And now with the White Sox adding another closer, just like the Astros, but adding Craig Kimbrell, the closer on the market, to Hendricks, it's going to be interesting to see how tight it gets between comparing the two teams, the White Sox and the Astros. That's a little baseball for you. We'll keep the updates coming for you in terms of anything that happens between now and the deadline. We got an NBA draft to talk about. We had four first-round picks last night, and boy, oh boy, dare I say it, the Rockets did themselves good. They did themselves proud, and they really, really got a boatload out of last night's draft. There's also some trades with that as well. So we have lots more to get to, and you always are a part of the conversation. 713-780-3776 if you want to call or text the program. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitch. You can hit us up on Twitter. He's Patrick Creighton. I'm Joel Blank. Today, it's the Press Box ESPN.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Carbach Brewery. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, here we go. Rolling into the second half hour of the show. It's the Press Box on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. all the usual suspects. Did I say that? I mean, all the boxers, all the good peeps are rolling in, hanging out with us today. We love to see that. We've got a special spot as we remember Arthur. Therefore, it's kind of like a funeral where everybody gets together and gets a special room and says goodbye while they talk about how bad he was as a person while we knew him, but actually we're going to miss him now that he's gone. And so they've got an upstairs location here at Carbach Brewery. You should stop on by. It's literally on Carbach Street. It's right here by 290 and 610. Stop on by. We'll be here till 4. Blitz will be here till 7 and probably much later than that, as this is indeed the final farewell for AJ before he heads off to Vegas and Sin City tomorrow. Leaving on a jet plane. Talked the first half hour of the program about the most current of the big stories in Houston, and that being the fact that the trade deadline has until 3 o'clock Central. So covered some of the latest moves. Craig Kimbrell just leaving the Cubs to go to the White Sox. Covered some of the moves that happened last night. But now let's get to the really, really good stuff of last night, PC. Rockets adding not one, not two, not three, but even because in the middle of the draft they added a fourth first-round pick. And the key here to me was They did not swing and miss at number two. They did not screw around and draft a guy that did not want to work out here, that they thought that they would act smarter than everybody else and go get an Evan Mobley, even though he didn't want to be here and you weren't sure you needed him anyway. They went and got the guy that everybody thought they needed all along, that was the best player available, Jalen Green. He already said he wanted to play with Kevin Porter Jr. They already look like a young backcourt that you can build around. But on top of that, you add three more 19-year-olds. You add size with two guys. You add wing depth and guards with two guys. You add guys that are now creating a very to evaluate them. You have a nucleus of young kids that can grow together. They'll make mistakes together. But this is the kind of rebuild you need. Because let's be honest, with the entire way the landscape looks like in the NBA right now, you're not going, even if you thought you'd be decent, you're not going to be good in where you want to be with the competition alone, let alone with your roster, for the next 3 to 4 years. So this was the first step in admitting you're rebuilding, pressing the full reset button, and getting good value for the picks that you had.
Rafael Stone has now laid out what his plan is and essentially what his timeline is. Like you said, you got four 19-year-olds. That tells you they're kind of looking at a 3 to 4 year window of developing these kids and having them be part of what the new core of the team will be. Jalen Green was the no-brainer pick at two. He is the guy with the most offensive upside of anybody in the draft. He can get it from anywhere. And I liked, much as the same way as I liked LaMelo Ball coming out of Australia. He had played overseas in professional leagues back at 16 years old, and then he played in the Australian League where he was the best player in the league. He played against pros. He played against guys who probably had a chip on their shoulder. I'm not going to let this little punk, he's not going to come in here and show me what's up. I'm going to show him. Mm-hmm. We're going to rough him up a little bit. We're going to bang him around. We're going to make it hard for him. So Jalen Green playing in the G League, well, there's a lot of veterans who play in the G League. You know, Bobby Brown was talking about Jalen Green, Jarrett Jack, and Amir Johns.
Brian Shaw was his coach.
Who are on his team. Yeah. And they played against other teams. And you know, Bobby Brown was talking about, hey, we knew veteran guys on other teams who are trying to get their shot back in the NBA. They're not going to let these young kids just walk all
right,
over them.
Right.
So this is a guy who has had to play against guys much older than him, bigger than him, more savvy, more experienced than him, and he still excelled. So I like that. I actually like that more than, oh, I played in college.
I agree.
Yeah, there was probably in my league of 14 teams, 10 of them were trash, and two others had like one player, and you know, if we played like one or two really good teams. I think this was a better learning process, and I think Jalen Green is more ready to play in the NBA because of the fact that he played in the G League. I thought that was a great pick, but to me, the move that they made at 16 mm-hmm. was the changer. Because they made a move at 16 to get a guy who is a big player that the Rockets scout internationally very well, very strong. And they'll tell you they think the Turkish league is, if not the second best league outside the NBA, it's definitely top three. And this is a young kid who's already the MVP of that league, who's a big, who's got great footwork, who creates great passing and can shoot.
Now, but if you squint, do you
yeah.
I mean, that was the big thing last night. But if you squint, you see the Joker. Do you, though? You might see flashes of a good pass here and there. The kid's 19. He's not the MVP of the NBA, but at least you see a guy with internet, as you mentioned, with international ties. The correct pronunciation, Alperen Şengün. But they said analytically the best player in this draft. The only concern I have in the whole draft, Pat, because I agree with what you're saying so far, but the only concern that I have of an otherwise stellar night for your Houston Rockets is they gave up two future first-round picks for this guy. And it's not like they're going to be 10 years from now. And they didn't have that many to give up. Those are going to be on years where there were pick swaps. And that's the thing. You have to worry about the fact that if this team's not going to be good and relevant for 4-plus, those picks could have a lot of value, and you're losing two picks for what you had to give up.
They could, but these picks are pretty well protected. So the picks that are getting transferred are a pick for 2022 from the Detroit Pistons,
yeah,
and a pick from 2023 from the Washington Wizards. Now, the Pistons pick is protected through 16 next year. It's protected through 18 the following 2 years. 13 and 25, 11 and 26. So there's a lot of lottery protection on that pick from Detroit, more so than the pick from Washington. The pick from Washington doesn't convey until 23. It's top 14 protected in 23. It's top 12 protected in 24, top 10 in 25, 8 in 26. So these picks, because both Washington and Detroit, much like the Rockets, Detroit really more so, Washington made their own moves yesterday that may actually put them in a better position.
Yep.
But Detroit is in a rebuild just like the Rockets are. That pick may not convey for 4 or 5 years.
But they're way ahead of where the Rockets are. They have already finally started getting it right with a good young nucleus that they put together last season. You obviously add a Cade Cunningham. You're in an Eastern Conference where it's not top to bottom. It's not stacked. But you know, you look at that situation and go, they could be leap years ahead of where we thought they've been for years previously, and they could make some strides. But, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think that the other – I worry about giving up picks because of how gun-shy I am after all Daryl did to clean out the cupboard. But I get that the fact that the here and now is you got another guy to add to three picks that are 19 years old, they're all the same age, and they can all develop together.
I'll tell you what, if Detroit – makes a Knicks-style improvement next year, and they're like a top-five seed, and they wind up drafting.
They're not going to be a top
five. Like, well, because the Knicks shouldn't have been a top-five
seed
right. Either. But if they wind up drafting 19, 20, 21, and Şengün turns out to be two-thirds of the player that Jokic is, that's a win. Especially considering how small they have been for so long. They need to get young guys in there that they can coach their way. Şengün is not going to run the floor the way Clint Capela did. But he's a guy who can facilitate offense in the half court and who can hit shots. And he's got a lot of footwork. You know, the European guys usually have that spinny footwork. And obviously, look, we're not comparing anybody to Hakeem Olajuwon. But Olajuwon,
a foreign-born
player who... all the soccer, he had great footwork around the basket. He spun circles around guys like Robinson and Ewing. Şengün is a guy who can kind of do that. He's got light feet. He can spin around. He's better on his toes down there on the low blocks than most guys that size.
International players work at that. It's not like AAU circuit where they just throw the ball out and run and say, go do this. They work on footwork. Look at Luis Scola. Look at some of the international players. Even an Omar Asik, who really had no touch around the basket, but he understood what to do and where to do it, and that's why you like a kid from Turkey, similar in terms of where he's coming from and what the leagues he's playing in, but you look at a guy that can come in and do. You have enough scoring. Look at what you drafted last night. Look what you already have in KPJ. You have enough scoring. What you really need to focus on is being a complete team as you get older, as you mature together, and that's what you got. You got yourself right there, a center of the future. Capela was in the 20s when they picked him. Everybody thought he was going to be a throwaway, bury him, stow him away in Europe, and eventually at some point we'll bring him back. No, he hung around. He turned into something good, who's turned into something even better with the Atlanta Hawks. And that's, again, like you said, with their international scouting department, that's something that you hold your hat on and go, you know what, I think this could be another guy like that. He doesn't have to be great, but he could be really good.
And you mentioned about drafting to an entire team concept. And I thought with their later picks at 23 and 24, that's exactly what they did. They drafted to a team concept. They got some athletic guys who can really get after it defensively. Look, you can teach guys offense. Coming from New York, Patrick Ewing couldn't shoot from 5 feet when he came out of Georgetown and became one of the best shooting centers ever. You can teach guys offense. You can't teach guys motor. You can't teach them determination. Defense is about how bad you want it.
And size. You can't teach the God-given ability to be 6 foot nine to 7 foot tall with a wingspan.
Oh, I wish it could, because I would have taught myself.
There you go. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. Lots more to talk about in the draft and that trade you were talking about. We're going to mention that as well. Russell Westbrook once again changing zip codes, but doing it to come back home and really set themselves up for a big three in L.A. Before we get to the break, I want to tell you about new brakes, because speaking of brakes, look, you'd love to get your brakes fixed, and you know it's a hassle. And most times you go to a place where you got to sit in a crappy waiting room, the TV sucks, the vending machine food is terrible, cold coffee, bad furniture, and then you're at their mercy and you're there for as long as they decide it'll take for them to fix your car. Well, at New Brakes, it's completely the opposite of that. You go to nubrakes.com, that's nubrakes.com, and set up your first appointment. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%. But then when the process begins, you're going to find out you can keep doing whatever you do during the course of the day. You want to stay at work? They'll do it in your parking garage. You want to do it at the house? They'll come to your driveway or your garage, and while they're fixing your brakes, you're going to be cutting the lawn. You're going to be watching a game. You're going to be drinking a beer. It's all because time is money, and they're saving it for you by allowing you to multitask. And then once they do the job, all they do is brakes. They're certified technicians, and the fact that what they do is as good as anywhere else you can get brakes done with the same kind of products and the same kind of results. Check them out today, newbrakes.com, and set up your appointment. Do it. So many listeners of The Box have done. They've gotten their brakes fixed with New Brakes, and they couldn't be happier. Check them out today. It's newbrakes.com.
They shooting. I will take that roof, Chris. I get the brief, then it's adios. If I'm with you, then she give it. When I see police, then we gang low.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Carbach Brewery. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, part of the process, as we were talking about what happened last night for your Houston Rockets in the draft, is that they did really, really well. And in his first draft as general manager of the Houston Rockets, Rafael Stone pulled off not only the three picks that they had, but added another one to the mix. Got four 19-year-olds, got bigs, got smalls, got scoring, got a lot of potential, and did really well. They did not trade Eric Gordon, which I had hoped that they would do as well. The thing that you have to really realize is now with four 19-year-olds, Kevin Porter Jr., Kenyon Martin Jr., and Jayshon Tate, with that surplus of young talent, it becomes even more imperative that you keep John Wall's ornery ass away from them as much as possible, because he's disgruntled. The only thing he's happy about is his money. And with him and possibly an Eric Gordon, who would love to be playing for contenders, but their contracts and how much the team took care of him before Daryl Morey left is going to affect that possibility negatively. It's now up to the Rockets to say, as they get closer to free agency, as they look at the path for this year, the last thing you need is a veteran that's going to stunt the growth of a very, very young roster.
They're going to have conversations with John Wall. You're going to have some hard conversations with John Wall about, look, where this team is, what they expect of him. Hey, look, if Russ can get traded three times, you got to believe, is it possible to trade John Wall? Sure, but that doesn't make it probable. And, you know, finding another team that can absorb that kind of cap hit, for the Rockets, you can't trade John Wall and then take back more money longer term, right? You have to shorten your money. Even if it's not this year, maybe you take back the money, but it all washes out this year. You can't take back somebody that's going to be on the contract for 3-4 years. And, you know, with Gordon, Gordon's contract is certainly easier to deal than John Wall's.
But still no easy task.
Not an easy deal. And if you can find a deal for him, and realistically for the amount of money that those guys are owed, getting out from under those contracts is probably a bigger issue than whatever you get in return, as long as you're not taking back more money.
Well, I mean, you know what? At the end of the day, the one luxury that they still have that they will always have that they might have to consider is if John Wall is more of a distraction than he is a benefit to being around the team, then just tell him to stay home. You know, I don't think that Tillman's in any kind of financial situation where he's going to want to pay the guy and cut him. Unless there's a substantial money coming back from John Wall, which he hasn't indicated he wants to do, to get a buyout, and then he can go wherever he wants. So the bottom line is, much like last year, hey, he needs knee surgery. He may not have it till April or May, but in the process of waiting for the knee surgery, if you're going to be a pain in the ass, you're going to be in street clothes, and if it gets to be too much, you can stay home. They can do something like that. Gordon is different. Gordon's a guy that, like you said, it's not impossible, it's not improbable, it's not ideal contract-wise, but Daryl Morey and other people that know Eric Gordon, even the Pacers, as they were rumored last night, were interested in Eric Gordon. You can find a home for him, but then you also have to be very cognizant of the fact, no matter who you send out, you're still going to fill your roster with some veterans. Those veterans better be happy to be there, guys. Better be, hey, how can I help these kids out, guys? And not guys that are like, I need to get mine, back the hell off, get out of my way, because I've been here and done this for longer. Because that's only going to stunt the growth of this young nucleus that you just put together.
Yeah, you don't need 25-year-old veterans, because those guys are trying to get another contract. Those guys want their playing time. They want what's mine. So, yeah, you're looking for older guys who are willing to accept that kind of role. Or you're looking for guys that know, hey, look, I'm a bench guy. I know what I am, and I'm probably going to sign for the minimum or something really close to it. I just want to play. So those, you know, that's kind of where you are when you're a super rebuilding team. The Rockets are right now. This is the bottom, and everything goes up from here, hopefully.
Right.
But this is the bottom. You know, you bottomed out. You had the worst record in the league. You trying to rip the core of your team down and rebuild it. They had a terrific night at the draft last night. They drafted players that, at the very least, will be rotational guys for this team for the next 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Christopher, who they got from Arizona State, he's a really athletic freak. He's the kid who set the record for the jump at the NBA Combine, 48-inch vertical. That's insane. I saw
the video of him doing it. Yeah.
To jump 4 feet in the air, like just clear 4 feet. I might be able to jump like 4.8 inches, maybe, possibly. We'll see about that. But he's a guy that might spend some time in the G League this year, work on a shot, work on some consistency issues. But he's got talent and he's got athletic ability. And that's a guy who you look at and say, a year from now, when I need to put somebody in to be a lockdown defender on somebody, I'm going to send Josh Christopher after him, and I'm going to make them deal with him.
Well, and the thing is, I watched him play at Arizona State this year, and he played for a good coach in Bobby Hurley as well. But you know what? It's just like the rest of this team. He's going to make some mistakes, but you can't not notice his ability to be fluid offensively, to know what to do with the basketball when he gets it, to be athletic, and as you mentioned, have those variables that not many buddy has when you could see a guy that can jump the way he can jump, and he can run the floor. Defense is a mindset, as we know, because Green's going to have to do the same damn thing. For as well as they are gifted athletically and good with the ball in their hands, they're going to have to learn to be two-way players. And the other thing that we keep talking about is, whether they're up and down, whether they're in the G League, whether they're just taking their lumps by being a part of this Rockets core for the next couple of years, they're not going anywhere anyway. So you might as well get the experience on the highest level, learn from your mistakes, grow together as a unit, and realize your time is 4 or 5 years down the road. The time now is for the Nets and the Lakers and the Bucks and all the teams that are already loaded up for Bear. You're not going anywhere anyway, so the best thing to do is learn as a group, feed off of each other, create some camaraderie, and then take your chances in another 5 years or so.
No, and there was an event in New York City where Jalen Green and Josh Christopher were participating in an event. There's pictures of them on Twitter from those two guys at that event. There were also pictures of them with Terrence Clark, which, you know, was I thought that was a really nice touch the NBA put on to honor him.
Yep.
And they had pictures of Christopher with Jalen Green and with Terrence Clark, these guys participating in this event in New York City back in April. So it was pretty cool, and these are guys who they at least have some kind of familiarity with each other. Şengün is going to be coming over, and he's probably going to have to, you know, learn the American style of the game. Usman Garuba is another guy who's going to have to learn the American style of the game. But if you saw some of the highlights they were playing for him, playing in Real Madrid, not a big time scorer, but a relentless defender who's
huge,
got,
like you said, huge motor, and you can see he's playing in the Olympics right now. He's there for a reason. He's athletic. He defends. He's got a good ticker.
And those kind of guys that come off your bench and just harass the hell out of the other team's best players and just annoy them. You know, Patrick Beverley, when he was here, fans loved him because he would just get up in the other team's best guard's grill and he'd be all over them. And I think even now, I think there are still people in this city who still have respect for Patrick Beverley, not because he was a great offensive player, but because he wasn't afraid to get in there and mix it up with anybody. Didn't matter size, none of that. You've now got a couple of guys in this draft who are 19 who will go after whomever you sic them on. And that's a mentality that they have not had in a long time.
From a defensive perspective. I'll give you Patrick. I'll see your Patrick Beverley and say, not best case scenario. That's pretty good, right? High ceiling, Drew Holiday. A guy that whoever it is that has the ball, I can guard you 94 feet. I can put myself right in your belt buckle, and I'm not going to leave you alone. And that's the kind of defender you're after, because we all know from situational basketball in the NBA, you're going to need guys that can just be put into the game with one focus only, and that is go shut that guy down. Go slow him down. Go do something that most of the guys on my roster can't do, and that's a good thing.
Drew Holiday changed the entire dynamic of the NBA Finals because he got on Chris Paul. And for the first two games, it looked like Phoenix was going to run him out the yard. And, okay, change it up. First two games, Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, they were terrible. All of a sudden, those guys show up, and Chris Paul's having a real hard time because Drew's in his grill.
Right. So that's something to keep in mind as we talk about the Rockets and what I think we both can agree was a fantastic draft last night and the start of the rebuild going 100 miles an hour in the right direction. We got to talk about this Russell Westbrook trade because, oh, by the way, he found his next team as he continues to play hopscotch across the NBA, only this one finds him right in his own backyard, right back where he started, from L.A. roots to his UCLA one-and-done status. He's going to be there next year in L.A. with LeBron and AD. PC and I are going to break that down as we start hour number two of the program. Keep it right where you've got it.
Breaking
news. This
is the
press box. Uh-oh. Do you want to wait till after the break?
Of course I do.
That's a good thing to do. That's a radio tease. We've got breaking news on top of the Westbrook trade to talk about and so much more. And oh, by the way.
Hello, Trey. Trey's here with the most manly wave I've ever seen. If you guys want to take pictures with Trey,
Trey, there's no way I can read that from over here.
Trey just said hi and wanted to show us and have us read something off his phone that's basically in print that no one can read. No, don't get that close. We'll be back with hour number two right after this. It's the Press Box on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. So baby, I'm
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.